Well, let's bring in Jim Walsh now. He's from the Security Studies Program at MIT and Here and Now Security Analyst. So, Jim, we just heard from David's skepticism about whether this ceasefire can hold. What do you think?
Well, I think David's skepticism is well-founded. This is more or less exactly the same ceasefire agreement the sides had in September, and it quickly fell apart. I'm a little more optimistic about this one. Normally, you don't get ceasefires unless all the parties want it, and there are reasons why all the parties would want one now. The question is, how long will it last? You know, it might last through the muddy season as we get into April. Then will we see renewed fighting in the late spring or early summer? That remains to be seen. But there are good reasons why virtually all the sides except the rebels would want a ceasefire right now. And frankly, I do think Putin has tremendous leverage over the rebels. So I think he can enforce a ceasefire if he's inclined to.
And just briefly, why would he want it? He's been so interested in keeping his hold on Ukraine.
Well, I think what is the main thing he wants? He doesn't want Ukraine to join NATO. He doesn't want Ukraine to join the EU. And he's hoping to get those objectives. The other thing he doesn't want is for the U.S. or others to start supplying arms. That was a threat,
right.
A form of pressure that came out. And also the Europeans were due to vote on a new round of sanctions soon. So this delays. This ceasefire suits his needs insofar as it puts those conversations off the table for now.
Well, we want to move from Ukraine to the fight against ISIS. The president this week asking for authorization for a three-year war to fight ISIS, a request that would prohibit enduring offensive ground conflict. Now, some Republicans are saying that's handcuffing a U.S. response. Lots of troops might be needed. Some Democrats are saying the word enduring is just too fuzzy. You know, what does that mean, no enduring ground conflict? And that word might lead to ground troops in Syria, for instance, which they're uncomfortable with. You say what?
Well, I say if you go back and you look at the last two authorizations of military force, the one in 2001 and the 2002 for al-Qaeda and then the invasion in Iraq, this is a much more limited, far more limited authorization. There's a deadline, 3 years. It does have this prohibition on the use of, quote, enduring combat operations for offensive purposes. I think that's a restraint you don't see in any of the previous resolutions. And President Obama has made clear that he doesn't want to get involved in a big war. The other thing here is, we are involved. We have launched over 1,000 airstrikes. There have been U.S. troops on the ground because they've gone in to do hostage rescue. So at some point, we've got to stop looking off to the side and pretending this isn't happening and have a conversation and have a congressional vote as to whether we're actually on board with this or not.
This would repeal that 2002 authorization for war in Iraq, but it wouldn't repeal the 2001 very broad authorization to fight al-Qaeda. So be interested to see how that unfolds. But I just also want you to touch on Yemen because the U.S., the U.K., France all have closed their embassies in Yemen. The Houthi rebels, they are Shia. They basically overthrew the sitting government last week, reportedly yesterday took all of the U.S. embassy vehicles as the embassy closed. But the Houthi are not al-Qaeda in Yemen. So al-Qaeda, Houthi, a fallen government, your concerns?
Yeah, Robin, I think of the three stories we're discussing, this may be the most troubling for this week. So you have al-Qaeda, Sunni extremists, the Houthis, mostly from Shiite sect, and they battle each other. They fight against each other. In the middle was this government that was an ally of the U.S., and it has the weakest of the three parties, and it has fallen to the side. The reason why this is important is, first, the U.S. now has no counterterrorism partner in Yemen, and counterterrorism was its number one objective in Yemen. We no longer, not only do we not have a partner because the government's gone, we don't have a physical base, which was our embassy, for running operations, collecting intelligence, and trying to battle al-Qaeda. So from a counterterrorism perspective, that's a big loss for us this week. Secondly, this sets up what would be a broad civil war between Sunni extremists on one side and the Shiite minority on the other, and that's not good news for Yemen either.
Is there any way that the U.S. could eventually partner with the Houthi, being less of a potential enemy than al-Qaeda?
I think that that's a possibility, but I don't think, if you read the Houthi statements, there's not a lot of pro-U.S. rhetoric coming out of them. I think, you know, interests may drive the two sides to try to work out an accommodation, but that's really further down the road. Right now, we're playing defense. We're backing up. Mm. We're not moving forward.
So very interesting, Jim Walsh. Again, Security Studies Program at MIT and also Here Now's security analyst in the studio with us saying Yemen is the big security story of the week. We'll keep an eye on that, although it's hard. Not many reporters there. And now the U.S. pulling out. Jim, thanks as always.
Thank you.